Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
The News Run on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So this is Wednesday evening's Off The Ball. We'll be talking some Formula One later on this evening as Max Verstappen takes a degree of control over the championship. We have former F1 driver John Watson with us, 7:30. Any questions, welcome. Wednesday night rugby then, as the November internationals take over from the United Rugby Championship. Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times and Fiona Hayes, former Irish international, are with us. We will play you some of the Davy Fitzgerald interview from OTB AM this morning, and then Daniel McDonnell will be along for the football show after 9. Loads to chat through with Dan, actually, between 9 and 10. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack has his feed up for the evening. Anne-Marie Donnellan, you're very welcome. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
And Johnny Ward in the studio.
How are you, Joe? What's going on?
Lots is going on, Johnny.
What's going on? Formula One.
Johnny's a big fan.
It's hard to be, I guess, into all sports, but from your perspective, you gotta keep on top of these things. You gotta have a broad range of knowledge, even though you mightn't necessarily. We can't love all sports.
No.
Do you love Formula One?
No. Well, generally, I tend to follow it a year after the event on Drive to Survive. That's
yeah.
what I like to follow it these days. But to be fair, the current title race is really exciting. So it's Max Verstappen, the young speedster upstart, a coming force for a few years now, is finally, I think, maybe going to do it this year. So he's ahead of Lewis Hamilton with 5 races to go. He's 12 points clear. He won the US Grand Prix at the weekend, 140,000 in at the race in Texas. They're saying,
oh wow,
and they are putting it down to the Drive to Survive effect. They're saying it's never been more popular in the States. It's never made bigger inroads into the States, you know. And so Verstappen won that race, really aggressive tactics and tire changes at certain laps and all this kind of stuff that people who love the sport really enjoy. And so now it seems they go to Mexico, where his car suits the higher altitude, so he could build on his lead. And
wow.
That's how these things work. And John Watson, who's been a Formula One driver, been there and done it, and great guest, he's going to join us 7:30. John Watson was on with us one evening, and he was talking about the danger of the sport. And we hadn't realised this. And he said, you remember Niki Lauda's crash? And we were like, well, yeah, everyone, you know. He's like, yeah, no, I was first on the scene there. I held him in my arms. And he told extraordinary story, the memories of it.
Mm.
Imagine it was horrific. And Niki Lauda asking him, how's my face? And the answer's not good. So it is an extraordinary sport. I think it was huge here in the 90s for sure.
Eddie Jordan and Eddie Irvine and so on.
Yeah, we've talked about that. And then I would say it dipped massively for about 15 years, but it's on the up again.
Because of the series as well. And all that,
like. Mad to say that, isn't it?
Mm.
Ridiculous, really, but it seems to be. Have you watched the series?
No, I've in fairness, I've spoken to people who watched it that just got hooked in Formula One that I wouldn't have thought was possible at all. Like, so,
the series would go a long way towards hooking you.
Yeah.
It really would. It's proper behind the scenes stuff, in so much as they can. Like, obviously, they can't go too far behind the scenes, but in terms of bad language, disputes, mics being left on even when they're out of picture, and so they forget that they're mic'd up, as you would do. Not that an agreement has been broken, but just human nature as such. You walk out of here, you know you're mic'd up, but the camera's not in your face, so you sort of forget. You get used to them being around, so they really do start to loosen up. And
yeah,
it's good. It's good. It's very good. And you could start with season one.
And what, many seasons in?
I think we're 4. Are we 3 or 4? Mm-hmm. Do you watch it, Anne-Marie?
I haven't seen it. I've been meaning to.
Come on, guys. What are you doing with your time?
Lots Ronan Mullen speaks extremely highly of it.
Well, and do you need a better judge than Mullen?
And it's how Shane Hannon got so into Formula One that he ended up going to Spa, and then he didn't actually see a Formula One race, but because it was cancelled, or there was 4 laps. So his experience doesn't really count. But I'm pretty sure it was Drive to Survive that hooked him, so much so that he went to see it.
He's an anachronism, isn't he? Because he loves like sports that...
Yeah, he gets into his niche sports like nobody else.
Snooker,
yeah.
Kids, F1. Kids his age, like... I'm not sure there's anyone in the world of Shane Hannon's age who likes both Formula One and snooker.
Really, he should have come of age in the late 90s.
Shane Hannon.
He really was born 30 years
like
too late.
Scott Bakula in Quantum Leap or something. He's in the wrong time zone.
Yeah.
But endearing for all of that.
So John Watson on the way, 7:30. Any questions, by the way, fire them in. I'll try and put them to John. We're talking rugby after 8. And then Dan McDonnell on the way on the football show after 9. What's grabbing you in the world of football, Johnny?
Yeah, like we actually, myself and Dan was talking to Stephen Rice earlier today, the Ireland chief scout or whatever. So he's going to one of the games tonight. I think he's watching Spurs Burnley. But just the sellout of the tickets is great. Like, I think Brian O'Connor had an article in the Irish Times about this. It really does seem that the FAI should be getting a sponsor on board. Like, there's a lot of positivity there, you know, and you're probably getting something off for a bit of a cut price as well. And look at the women's game, like the coverage of that, like wall to wall, and the whole Irish football brand. It's come through the mire, but it could be in a worse place at the moment. And I'm just surprised it's taken this long for someone to latch onto it.
You've got to think that's incoming a sponsor, surely. Maybe it's difficult now towards the end of this
post-pandemic or
World Cup qualification campaign. You know, any sponsor coming on board might say, well, let's start afresh with the Euros campaign.
Maybe, but you can also go in and say, well, listen, like, you lads are obviously struggling here because you haven't had a sponsor in that long that cut us a bit of a deal. Like, it's sponsorship, as far as I'm aware of sponsorship, is about reflecting a good image and brand kind of, I don't know, synchronization and all that. And if you want a brand that is the new Ireland, a lot of young players who seem to, you know, represent different parts of Ireland, but could actually be doing okay down the line. I don't know. I'm just surprised. I'm not negotiating on behalf of the FAI, but I think they could be in a worse position here. You know, the game just sold out. Like, I've kind of made a few sob stories about this. It's actually on my birthday, and I'd love to go to the game, but like, obviously, I have no ticket now, and I won't be going to one of the tout websites or whatever. Like. So it's great that, like, it's great on one level, but there are obviously a lot of people now who'd like to go to the game, and that's for me it was partly that I'll probably never see Ronaldo again, and I have never seen him play, so I think there's a huge element of that for people that
have you never seen Ronaldo?
Not in the flesh. No.
Messi?
No. I guess Ronaldo, the time for Ronaldo for a lot of Irish fans is when Shamrock Rovers played Madrid that time, and that sold out again. But those tickets were like 60 quid and they sold out in no time. Now, Messi for me would be completely different level to Ronaldo, in the sense of, like, I think he's a more amazing player in what he can do, but I haven't seen him. And
would you not think about nipping over to Paris while you can?
I've just come back from the south of France, actually, and I would go to anywhere in France in a heartbeat. Like, oh, yeah, I should.
Should
do, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's one of them. We're in a golden era, and like, we're coming to the end.
Anne-Marie, Ronaldo or Messi in the flesh?
I've never seen either.
Oh, for God's sake. Who am I surrounded by here? You're both 0-2 here on Drive to Survive, and now Ronaldo and Messi in the flesh. If there's a third strike here that comes up unplanned, you're both out of the studio. It's unacceptable.
I've never been to a La Liga game. So, like, I would have missed a lot of... I've been to a lot of games in Italy and Premier League games. I've seen Salah, who's probably the best player in the world at the moment, so I'm happy enough with that. Isn't he?
Well, yes, but, I mean, Ronaldo and Messi is a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I want a ticket for the game. Let me at least, like... Then I can work on Paris. But isn't it great, though, like, this...
Yeah.
Do you know, in the context of... Like, Ireland haven't had that many good games, but Irish football has become a big thing again, where, you know, the old Vantage Club trying to sell tickets to Ireland games versus how easy it was for the rugby lads. And part of me, like, would really envy that. But it maybe for corporates and for all that, it might be cool to go to Irish football games again, and hopefully this is the start of it.
Yeah, that's
25,000 at Qatar is probably more impressive, though, because you can say a lot of the 50,000 is the Ronaldo draw.
Yeah.
25,000 at Qatar was 25,000 Irish fans.
It's more than it just sold out. Like, an Irish football game, which is a complete dead rubber, sold out in minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. Like, I'm very excited about the future, but I'm just surprised that some brand hasn't cottoned onto it.
I've been very lucky, obviously. I've seen them both a couple of times.
Mm.
Went to the opening of the Aviva. Wasn't it the opening of the Aviva when
Argentina...
Yeah, it was Argentina,
the first night of the Aviva, yeah, the Argentina friendly.
Ireland. So I was at that. Now, he didn't do much, needless to say. I mean, he had one thing in his head there, don't get injured. Mm. And that's understandable. And then, you see, I suppose I got very lucky going to the World Cup in Brazil in 14. So I got to see them both quite a few times around then. And the more memorable one was Messi against Iran, managed by Carlos Queiroz then. And it was a very, not dour, it was a reasonable game, but chances were few and far between. And in the end, Messi makes the breakthrough and scores, you know, typical kind of Messi goal, and it was amazing. And but the overarching memory of that game, which wouldn't have really been apparent on TV, is that Diego Maradona was there and was conducting the whole stadium for most of the game.
Was that the game where the camera was on him a lot?
Might well have been, because I was obviously in the stadium, so I don't know. But he was literally conducting the stadium. You were watching Maradona almost as much as you were watching
on
the pitch. And obviously any break and play,
it was on
he
Maradona.
Gets it going again. He was just, it was weird how visible he was. He was just at a, whatever way, he was in lower stand, upper part of it. And it was like he had a circle around him of space. Mm. You just see him at all times.
Mm.
Obviously he likes getting involved and getting the crowd going. So that was kind of extraordinary to watch Maradona conducting a stadium and Messi to score a breakthrough goal.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I saw like Zlatan Ibrahimovic playing in Tala with nobody at the game, so you could hear the players. Like that was a fairly interesting experience. And even at his age, it was amazing to watch someone's movement.
Well, I spoke to someone who was at a Manchester United match, it must have been. And they'd really know their football. And so I was curious, anything strikey in the flesh? And they said Zlatan's touch was a touch different to most people out there.
And his strength as well. And he didn't have to have pace. And saw Joe Canning a lot, to be fair.
Well, listen,
I count myself very lucky there. A lot of people.
We're two Galway folk here, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, that's three strikes. You're both out. Yeah.
Yeah, King Henry's Barmy Army and all that.
Are you excited about King Henry?
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. I mean, the aforementioned Joe obviously will be a lot of the chat, but I don't know. It's just been a strange time for Galway. The last 2 years have been so nondescript. I really don't know what the problem was behind the scenes, but the way it was all conducted, I quite liked. Like nobody seemed to leak it. How would you not be excited? Kenny Galway's going to be box office next year.
Oh. We should get into the news round. Some of the texts. Before I do, so Trev wonders, isn't Formula One just horse racing with more horsepower? Same deal, you've jockey slash driver takes all the credit, even though it's said the horse slash car that does all the work. Johnny should be a fan, says Trev. John, here's one for you both. Call me a Philistine, but sport is just better on the TV than in person. It's the less romantic opinion, but you just see so much more watching on the TV.
Definitely not at football games, like.
Yeah.
Unless you have a really bad seat, like watching a football game, as in soccer, live on TV, is not comparable to being at the game, because you're directed by the camera director as to what to watch. Whereas when you're watching a game, you can basically watch whatever you want to watch.
No, that's true. I agree with you on the movement at the other end of the pitch.
Mm.
You do miss out on seeing the intricate replays of up close and personal, and so that can change your opinion of how certain players did in certain scenarios. But apparently the next frontier now is we'll all put on some form of glasses or 3D and you'll be able to look to your right if you want and see what's out of picture, and look to your left and you'll see what's out of picture. In effect, it would be like you're in the stadium, and you can, if the play is in Ireland's half against Portugal, you can turn your gaze right to see what Ireland are, how many players Ireland are leaving up or what they're doing.
Just go to the game if you can get a ticket.
Well, you can't.
I mean, long way to go.
And the only reason the game is sold out is that Ronaldo's coming to town. Nothing to do with Kenny, says Barry from Wexford.
Nothing to do with him, but I mean, the Ronaldo impact could be greater than the. It's a dead rubber. At the same time, so the Ronaldo effect probably is the main thing, I would say.
I know what you mean when you say it's dead rubber. It's not quite a dead rubber from an Irish football point of view, though, is it? Like in terms of Kenny's future and
No.
So there is a lot on the line, isn't there?
A lot on the line, and I can't wait now. The asterisk is that I'll be at the game, but I can't wait to hear the roar after Ron Naveen. And the atmosphere in that ground, because it hasn't existed maybe since, I'm speculating, like maybe the Germany game or something, where it would be just an amazing atmosphere, particularly because I think, and actually Stephen Rice spoke about this today, and I felt that on the night when we drew against Serbia, there was a sea change in that crowd in the second half, where it was like, we're going to support you kids, like, and it was the likes of Bazuna and Omobo Medele. It was like, well, I know we're getting battered here, but you're defiant and we're going to support you, and you might be around for a long time.
Mm. We should start the news round. It is, as ever, with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Anne-Marie, we are starting with the live football this evening. Bad news for Caoimhín Kelleher.
Yeah, he will miss out on Liverpool's trip to Preston North End. They are away to them in the last 16 of the EFL Carabao Cup. That's after the Cork native recently suffered a setback in training. That's one of five games that kicks off shortly at 7:45. Burnley and Tottenham meet at Turf Moor. Leicester City and Brighton is at the King Power Stadium. Aaron Connolly and Shane Duffy both start there for the visitors. Stoke then entertain Brentford, and holders Manchester City are at a sold-out West Ham. And speaking of the London Stadium, West Ham were today granted planning permission to increase the capacity to 62,500. It would mean another 2,500 seats added, making the former Olympic ground the biggest club stadium in the city. They moved there from Upton Park back in 2016.
Okay, we'll keep you updated on the matches throughout the evening. So the ticket tout situation?
Yeah, some clarification on this. And from midnight tonight, the Aviva Stadium will be a designated venue under ticket touting law. This means tickets for matches there can't be resold above face value. This comes on the back of tickets for Ireland-Portugal World Cup qualifier emerging on resale websites for multiple times the original cost yesterday. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said today that the government is ensuring this doesn't happen again.
What we're going to do today and tomorrow and over the next couple of days is sit down with Croke Park, sit down with the Aviva, sit down with the major sporting bodies, FAI, GAA and IRFU, and suggest to them, or at least impress on them, the advantages of having those events designated, because we have three rugby internationals coming up, as you know. There'll be other soccer internationals as well, and we want to make sure that as many of them get designated as possible.
I was just surprised this wasn't in place already.
Yeah, so the law was brought in. The law was changed last year, but it has to be designated. But how anybody didn't realise when the draw was made, Portugal in Ireland, that this wouldn't be a sellout, that it needed to be designated, is beyond me.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like the most surprising development.
No.
Fair enough.
But it looks like going forward that those rugby internationals and games again in Croke Park, they've gotten a bit of a scare today.
Okay. So that was Leo Varadkar. Rangers Celtic tribute to Walter Smith.
Yeah, special tribute tonight at Ibrox. Stephen Gerrard's side take on Aberdeen in the Scottish Premiership. That's just a day after the 73-year-old's death. Elsewhere, Celtic are away to Hibernian. Both of those games underway at 7:45. As you said, former Rangers manager Walter Smith died yesterday.
You didn't see Ali McCoist on TalkSport talking about Walter Smith?
I didn't, but I'd heard him speak about him before, and it's almost you feel like I knew Walter Smith by the way that McCoist has spoken about him before. And, you know, obviously, being from the Republic of Ireland, you're kind of almost obliged to have some sort of an affinity with Celtic, which I don't really have. And I always just thought that he came across as a proper, proper good man. And it's a very sad day. He wasn't old at all.
Mm. Yeah, McCoist was really
His
emotional
tribute to him yesterday.
Beautiful.
Was lovely, yeah.
So that clown, this is a texter, Barry's talking about, saying sports better in the telly is on three strikes as well, Joe. Remember going to my first match as an 8-year-old at Lansdowne Road, Ireland against Western Samoa. The fact you can actually hear the smack of body on body, bone on bone, was a shock to the system. I hear you, Barry. That said, the microphones around the pitch now are very good, so you do hear the clashes as well.
To be fair, though, I've rarely gone to rugby games, but that is something that really struck me.
I was at an AIL game 2 weeks back. Cork Con against Clontarf.
That's speaking of anachronisms, that's a cool thing to do.
I've been going to loads of live sport. I've moved into this area, so I'm going to Parnell Park for the GAA matches at the moment. I'm not too far away.
You want to be accepted locally?
That kind of a thing, you know? I'm not too sure which GAA club I'm going to gravitate towards. I'm leaning towards, it's not in my immediate vicinity, but I think Clontarf because of Jack. Oh my God, how's his name going in my head? Retired
McCaffrey.
From Dublin. McCaffrey. I think I'd like to watch Jack in a relatively
he's a really exciting player to watch. Remember those days in Croke Park, and he'd get the ball and the whole stadium would move forward and you'd be just excited.
So my logic is, imagine being close to that at club level.
It'd be
amazing to see. But I was so Cork Con against Clontarf, there aren't that many people there, obviously. You're really close.
What sort
to the
of crowd?
I thought it'd be more, actually. I would say 300 or 400. I don't know, I thought there'd be more, just because the appetite's there and AIL is back for the first time and all that kind of stuff. But
I was amazed at the sound of the bodies clashing. I mean, when they're 10 metres in front of you, you're kind of grimacing yourself. And there was one high tackle where both the tackler and the player tackled were both split open. And we were right out, we were kind of standing right at the bench, and the Cork player came over, and his, I mean, the gash in his forehead was, it was wide, you know, and it was nasty. So you don't get that on the TV.
No, you don't. You don't, although, yeah, the obviously people watching on TV is where it's at these days. That's where the money is.
On Stephen Kenny, by the way, I would think he's fairly assured of a contract.
These
two games, Portugal, 2-0, 3-0 defeats, not the end of the world.
I think they'll acquit themselves well against Portugal. Right. I'd be amazed if he didn't get a new contract, to be honest. And I hope he does. I think there's a good vibe around the squad. I think they are making progress. It's been slow. A lot of things have gone wrong, but I'm like you, Joe. I mean, if you want to go bringing in some well-established British manager, whoever it is, I'd prefer somebody. And actually, speaking to Rice again about this today without going on about it, I think this coaching staff are somewhat innovative themselves in some of the things they're doing, whereas a lot of other managers came in and their prerogative was just qualify if we can. And I'm very hopeful for the future. I'd be amazed if we didn't get a new contract.
Mm. So where were we? Oh yeah, Walter Smith. There'll be a tribute this evening. The women's rugby squad has been announced. They have two matches in November.
It has, Joe, and six uncapped players have been named in Ireland's rugby squad for those November autumn tests. Head coach Adam Griggs has called up Leinster's Mary Healy and Ella Roberts. That's as well as Connacht duo Grace Brown Moran and Shanna Tui, and Munster's Maeve O'Leary and Alana McInerney are also included in the 33 player selection. Ireland host the USA and Japan next month. Elsewhere, World Rugby says it does not wish to explore the concept of a 12 side competition at this point. The idea of a World 12s tournament was flouted back in September and at the time received the backing from some big names. Players would be selected through an auction to represent eight franchised teams. It was anticipated that 192 of the world's best players would be involved. Plans suggested that the first tournament would be held in England next year, but this won't be happening.
Okay, we'll talk to Gerry Thornley and Fiona Hayes after 8 o'clock. Watching the game for 40 years, I was never as disappointed as Figo at Lansdowne Road. He was a disgrace, diving all over the pitch. Saw Ronaldo and the Aviva against Ireland when they wore those black and white anti-racism jerseys, says Steo in Dublin. I'm hugely looking forward to the Ireland-Portugal match to show my appreciation to Stephen Kenny and his new young team. Couldn't care less about Ronaldo. Absolute nonsense it sold out because of him. Come on, you boys in green, Jimmy. I think it's a little bit part of the attraction, if we're being totally honest, isn't it?
Yeah, although I'm like that, I'll quickly forget about him and I'll be cheering on him over Medele, who'll hopefully kick him out of the game in a good way.
An anonymous texter then. One time was in Barca, saw them play Zaragoza. Messi scored a typical goal. Zlatan had a free kick and a lad called Keita scored a hat-trick. Another time I was there, I went to Barca against a relegated team. I can't remember their name. Messi didn't play, Suarez scored a hat-trick. So there you go, you can get lucky. Gamma, I kept meaning, don't at the moment, to go over to Barcelona. Just never got around to it. That was a bad move. When the going was good, that would have been one thing to do. And El Clasico, when those El Clasico matches were pretty much the best games.
Mm-hmm. Best of the best, like.
Around. That 5-6 years, they were incredible. It's mad not to have gone, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And it's gone now, like, gone for the foreseeable.
It's totally gone.
Yeah.
like two old men here in a pub.
The Josh Cavallo story is interesting.
Go on, bring us that story.
If you will, actually.
Yeah, Australian Josh Cavallo has come out as gay and he becomes the only current top flight male footballer in the world to do so. In an emotional video today, which was posted by his club Adelaide United in Australia, he explained that growing up he was ashamed that he wouldn't be able to play the sport he loves and be gay at the same time. The midfielder praised the support of his family, friends and coaches who he says have made the experience of coming out incredible.
I don't know, like, I came across this on Twitter today and it's like some Australian footballer I've never heard of comes out as gay. Like, why is this a story that's in an Irish Twitter feed? And then you read it and it's bloody sad. Like, if you think, say, and this is very rough estimates, so 5% of the population, give or take, are gay. 400 odd players in the Premier League. Now, even if you're inclined to say maybe it's less than 5%, let's speculate. And that's one league. So, and I would suspect, if a League of Ireland player came out as gay, just for argument's sake, I don't think he would be subjected to abuse in the stands any more than any other player, for argument's sake. Shamrock Rovers fans will abuse Expos players and so on and so forth. Bowes fans will abuse Shamrock Rovers, so on and so forth. I think we've gone beyond that. And I'm entirely suspecting here that it's just the fear of being in the dressing room and just being one of the lads when... Because the amount of people who must be suffering because they're just afraid to make the step that one player made. I mean, there should be tens of thousands and there's only one, apparently. So it's... I mean... We've seen, like, in a lot of ladies' sport where it's become, pride has become a big thing and it's celebrated, and surely it's not, like, we're still living in the dark here. We're still living in the dark ages with regard to male sport. It's very, very sad.
It is very sad, yeah. Miles behind still. It's hard to know whether, I mean, you think it's the dressing room. I still think there'd be a fear of the stands, unfortunately.
Agents as well.
Agents.
Like, we know how much of a sway agents have over players.
Oh, same.
I think you'd need to have a very progressive agent to almost allow a player to come out.
As in for their own protection?
And also, like, I know it's kind of horrible to think, but, like, their value, like, would their value...
I see, again, if you have a good agent, like, the first Premier League player to come out is gay, that's a massive marketing opportunity, like, do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, you're an icon here. And it's pretty pathetic that, I mean, I don't agree with you there. I think, like, you could easily market, in the world that we live in, you could market the first gay Premier League player, but the first gay Premier League player has long retired and we just don't know who he is. It's sad.
No, it's horrific. And I don't know, you would hope very, very soon it's an announcement comes out, everybody quickly goes, oh, that's interesting.
Hopefully, and off the ball.
Gets on with their lives within about 2 minutes, because frankly, who cares? And then, you know, it just becomes a done thing. And gets to the point where, I mean, I get very uncomfortable talking about how, coming out.
Yeah, like the Leinster guy who, I don't even remember his name, but I remember thinking, this isn't particularly dramatic here. Like, I don't remember his name. I think he even came out as bisexual or whatever. And I was like, geez, is this really where we're at with this?
Well, we are, when there is still very, very few male players out, I suppose.
Yeah,
that's the right terminology. So that's where we are, yeah, unfortunately.
I was absolutely not having a pop at him at all. I was like, God, this is where we're at. And Josh Cavallo has become a name... you know, I would never have heard of him, and he's one of thousands, but the other, I don't know, it's just bizarre and sad.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I don't know, next 5-10 years, the whole thing flips on its head very, very quickly. I think it could happen pretty quickly, but it is ridiculous that this is still a thing and it's newsworthy. But
you could be the man to interview him, Joe. Just,
well, he'd be more than welcome. I'm sure he won't be shy of offers at the moment. Good on him. I mean, fair play to him.
Not Josh Cavallo now, the first player in these parts.
Well, yeah. To a point, again, it's so not a big deal that you kind of, even with misgivings, turn an interview into that. But I take your point.
It would be a hard interview to do, because it's kind of a nothing story, but it isn't.
Precisely.
I don't know why we're on here, but actually, anyway, go ahead.
There's a bit of that. Guys, we're out of time. We have to get to John Watson to talk Formula One. Anne-Marie, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
And Johnny Ward, thank you. Competition time.
Your chance to win big. Newstalk's Cash Machine.
So another rollover in our Cash Machine competition today. Nobody answered when we called at 3 o'clock. So it means the total of €5,666.21 up for grabs tomorrow. And we will be adding to that total. So you can tune into Newstalk Breakfast tomorrow morning from 8 a.m. to find out the new amount.
The News Round on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.